This is Intoxicated Literature.
Hello!
Hello!
Welcome to Intoxicated Literature. I am Daniela
and
Drake.
And I'm Evelyn Crow.
And tonight we're going to be discussing The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches by Sengu Mandana.
This was a cute book.
It was very cute. I really enjoyed it. And I know that a lot of people have been talking about it. So I'm glad that we're having this opportunity to chat about it as well.
Yes. It hasn't been on my feed, but my feed is on like social media is a little bit different from yours.
I would say so. I do follow a lot of cozy fantasy readers.
Which makes sense for your brand.
Yes. Yes. That is what I like.
Yes. So it was very cute. And actually, considering that people say my book is cozy, I should have more cozy books on my feed, but I do not.
Well, this is the thing. I feel like as a genre, cozy fantasy is still fairly new as like its own separate thing.
Cozy in general is very new.
Yes, and I feel like we're still kind of trying to decide what that definition
100%.
Means. 100%. And I think this book also has some elements to it that are surprising.
We will get to
that.
You don't
really expect
it. But let's do our caveat
first. Yes. Spoilers.
Yes.
We will ruin the entire book.
Entire book.
So if you have not read it, please go enjoy it and then come back.
There will be some adult content, but not too much. This book is fairly PG-13.
Of course, we might go off on tangents.
We are adults and we read lots of adult books. So.
And we are intoxicated.
And we tend to use profanity. So.
Yes, there will be swearing for sure. That can't be avoided, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, preferably 18 or older.
Let's get into
it. I also want to add
just
the caveat that colonialism and adoption will be discussed in this podcast. So,
yes.
If that is triggering at all for you, please be aware that that will be discussed.
Yes, which is what I want to actually get into first and foremost, because I know that when you hear the term cozy, it means something different to everyone, I feel like.
Well, people hear cozy and they think non-triggering. They think safe. They
yes.
think, I can read this and nothing bad will happen.
Yes, and I'm not sure that that's really the case, because especially I've read a few so-called cozy fantasies that for me were not cozy at all. That actually really stressed me out, because there are a lot of themes of trauma and grief. And, you know, one of the main tropes of cozy, I feel like, is found family.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you don't need found family unless your family is really, truly
well,
terrible.
And I can use my book, so I don't have to bash anybody else's. And I can use my book
yes.
for this. So when I wrote my book, I wrote it thinking it was a dark urban fantasy, because it dealt
yes.
with a lot of dark themes. She was exiled
yeah.
from her family, kicked out. Could not live with them anymore and had to live on her own. And there was like murder, and it's a whole lot of really dark themes dealing with trauma and purity culture and a lot of really serious things. And then readers would come back to me and say things like, it felt cozy. And I remember thinking, the fuck you said?
I know.
Because there is a whole page and a half of this book, if you buy the paperback, that is content warnings, because I wanted to make sure that no one went into this book and found something that was triggering for them, because
yeah.
I wrote it knowing that there was going to be triggering content in it, because I thought it
right.
was going to be dark. So when you think cozy, you think low stakes versus high stakes, I suppose.
I do think that that's part of it. I think a lot of people think low stakes. They think a smaller, more intimate story. It's not like end of the world, like epic fantasy type situations.
Right.
And unfortunately, that does tend to lend itself to people who find each other and, you know, create their own families because they don't have families of their own or whatever. So a lot of the time, you do have these characters who just have these horribly traumatic pasts
right.
that are difficult to read about.
They're hard. And
yeah. yeah.
So when you like low stakes, okay, great. Like, so when I asked a reader, I'm like, okay, but how is it cozy? People are
yeah.
dying. There's like murder happening and there's sexual assault and there's like a lot of things that are bad in this book. And she's like, okay, but I I never got the feeling that anyone was in actual danger. That everything was going to be okay. And that when she was with the Archer family, everything was safe.
Yeah.
Right? So everything felt really okay. I felt okay in this book. Regardless of what was happening and all of the trauma and all of that, by the end of it, you know, even through it, I came through okay.
And I think that that's kind of what the cozy fantasy genre has become to a lot of people. And it's different, too. I mean, it's a lot easier for me as a white person to read something and say, oh, I read to escape. Like, I don't have to deal with a lot of...
Because we are at the, you know, we don't experience marginalized trauma.
Yeah, exactly.
We do experience sexism, but that is pretty much it.
Yeah. And, like, so when you're reading something and you're like, oh, I just read to escape, and it's just a lot easier to escape when you're not dealing with systemic racism and, like, systems that are specifically designed to oppress you. And that's something that came up in this book. Like, there are children in this book who have been taken from their homes and brought to a different country to be raised.
Because we read diversely and because we are fairly educated. I am not saying I'm completely educated because I'm always learning.
Absolutely not. There's always room to grow.
So the author is a person of color. She lives in a predominantly white. She is British. So she has lived in Britain.
I think she's British. Is she Australian? No, I think she's British. Yeah.
But she's a person of color living in a predominantly white culture.
Yes.
And I remember getting to the part in the book where she is discussing, where she's describing the children living in this very white, rich woman's house. And the protagonist is also a person of color who has been taken from her home in India by a rich white woman whose parents have died. And I'm going, okay, what? These white women are just stealing children of color?
Yes.
And even the protagonist is going, wait a minute. What?
Yeah. As she should.
And the question is asked once.
Yes.
It is asked once and it is kind of answered kinda. And then it kind of goes away.
Yeah.
It's not really answered satisfactorily for me. I was not happy with the answer. It was like, well, no one could really care for you. Like, really? No one in India could care for her. There was not a single person. You could set, you know, could care for her, not one, really.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I don't believe that. So, you have these, you know, adoption issues where they are disconnected from their culture, and then these rich white people who are just taking these children, and not only were these children taken from their culture, Lillian especially changed their names.
Yeah, I was not thrilled about that.
Change their fucking names. And I was like, what?
I know.
The fuck was that? That upset me. I mean, it was bad already, and then that happened. And I was like, oh, no, wait a minute. Excuse me?
Yeah, I agree. That was definitely problematic.
She did what now?
I did not enjoy that part. I was like, was that necessary, really? Really? Because I don't think it was.
It was not necessary. I was upset. I kind of had to put my Kindle down and get up and walk away for a minute.
Yep, that's fair.
And then there's the premise that in this book, the witches are kept separate from other witches. They are hidden from society. Not only that, they are not supposed to be exposed to other witches. So these children were taken from their culture, from everything they knew, and brought to a whole foreign country, their names were changed, and then they weren't exposed to anyone.
Yeah, just completely
just
isolated.
Just completely isolated.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
I know.
I have big problems with that.
Yep, that's
and
fair.
I know that the author is not American, and content warnings are still relatively new.
Yes.
Even in America. So,
and it's traditionally published, which I think sometimes makes it different with content warnings as well.
Sure. But there were no content warnings for colonialism or adoption or anything related to this.
No.
Now, I'm white, so, and I'm not adopted. So these things were not especially triggering for me. They were upsetting because I care for children and their mental health, but I was not, like, triggered by this.
Right.
So I can only imagine what it would be like as a person who could be triggered by this, who were reading this unaware. So a cozy book can be cozy.
Yeah.
But they should still require content warning.
I absolutely agree. There have been a number of cozies that I have read that dealt with grief or past trauma of abuse, which was particularly triggering for me. I actually DNF'd that book because I literally could not read it. And so many people had told me, this is such a cozy book, like, you'll love it, and I literally couldn't read it. And if I had known that this was, and this was the back, like, this was just part of the character, like, backstory. It wasn't even part of the main story.
Or trauma.
Yeah. I just couldn't.
Well, and I talked to a friend of mine who was reading a book that was considered a cozy book, and it dealt with cancer.
Yeah.
Whose sister is struggling with cancer. She's like, I can't read this book. And there was no content warning.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I get that it's cozy.
Yeah.
But content warnings are there for a reason.
Yeah, at least let me go in with my eyes open. Like, I just want to know what it is so I can prepare myself and decide if this is something that I should be reading right now. Maybe I don't read it right now, but I read it, you know, a few years from now.
So, here's my question to you. There are people who say that content warnings are spoilers.
What?
Yes, there's the argument that content warnings are spoilers.
I think that those people probably don't need content warnings.
Maybe a little privileged and don't need them?
Yeah, don't really understand what that's about.
So here's my argument against that. Spoilers are spoilers because they give away specific plot points about characters or plot, and they tell you specifically, this character does this in the plot.
Yeah.
A content warning is not a spoiler because it does not tell you specifically at what point in the plot that happens to what character.
Also, if you're worried about spoilers and you don't like content warnings, don't read
them. Seriously. Just don't read them.
Like, you can choose not to read them. There have been times where I've skipped them because I know the book or I know it well enough that I'm like, nah, it's going to be fine. Yeah. And so I just don't read them.
I have very few triggers. I have very few. I have, like, two.
Yeah.
And unless I am, like, I know that that book contains those two, and they're two very, like, very rarely are those two actually a thing?
Right.
I'm not worried that that book is going to contain them.
Right.
So I'm not going to go into a book thinking, oh no, that book's going to have them. So I might just skip the content warnings, and that's on me. That is my fault if I skip the content warnings and all of a sudden that comes up in the book and I'm like, holy shit, there it is.
Yeah.
That is on me.
Yeah, you don't get to be mad about it at that point because it's already listed.
Especially if it's
there.
Listed in the front of the book. That is my fault. That is all on me.
Yeah, and this is definitely, this is one that I've seen, this book especially is one that I've seen a lot recommended.
It's recommended a lot, and it's not talked about because it deals with a lot of trauma.
Every character I feel like in this book has trauma.
Every
character.
Except for maybe, is it Lillian, the housekeeper?
Lucy.
Lucy's like the only one. And she's just...
Lillian we don't get to know because
she's
dead.
We don't see her.
We don't
Lucy's just, she's the housekeeper. She's like the one white woman who's alive. And she's just happy. She's just there. But we have...
Yeah. She kind of takes on a maternal role for... How do we say... Do you say Mika or do you say Micah?
I went back and forth the entire time reading this book.
The entire time. Like, literally, I would read it 50% one way and 50% the other way.
Because
I was like, I don't know which it is, and I want to get it right.
Because I just wanted to know how to say her name.
I agree.
I really wanted to know. I wanted to say it right. Especially because we were doing this podcast. I'm like, I want to say her name right.
Like when you look at the way it's spelled, it's spelled M-I-K-A.
So it's like Micah if you're British.
It is like Micah, yes. I think Micah is probably how it was intended.
I think so. think so.
If we're wrong, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry. I really don't know. Yeah. But her name, Micah Moon, pretty great.
Pretty great.
I love that she is in her 30s, a protagonist that is in her 30s, a fully grown adult. Love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Great.
I didn't love that there was literal generational trauma for every witch ever.
Every witch ever was basically forced into solitary confinement.
Well, an orphan.
Yeah!
They all lose their moms.
Like, what the at a young age. That? Oh, not just their moms, like their parents. They are orphaned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember reading that and just going, huh?
I know.
I almost put the book down. I'm not even joking. Because I'm a mom, and I just was like, nope.
Yeah, that's upsetting.
Because it wasn't like even, like, I can't read things about kids being harmed. That's like one of my triggers. And I'm like,
yeah.
That's a kid getting harmed. Their parents are gone.
Yeah.
Content warnings!
I know.
But the thing is, you don't see the kid getting harmed. It's off screen.
No. Yeah.
But at the same time, Mike is being picked up by a strange white woman who's in India. Why are these white women traveling the globe and picking up these foreign children? What the fuck, Britain?
I know.
What is happening?
Yeah, but that's how it works in this book, so we just have to go with it, unfortunately.
And actually, Primrose and Edward are both kind of, like, antagonists, I will say. Primrose was Micah's, caretaker. I don't even want to say parent, because she was never there.
No, she hired a bunch of nannies, and as soon as the nanny found out that Micah was a witch, she would erase her memory and send her packing and hire a new one. But this is the thing, too. Like, the book does address this, because Micah finally says, like, hey, why didn't you raise me? Like, you didn't teach me much about magic. Like, why weren't you more a part of my life? And it's like, oh, trauma. Trauma is the answer. Like, her aunt and uncle abused her so much that she didn't want to do that to her. So she just stayed away.
And
that was so much worse than what it would have been if she had just been a part of her life.
I was like, you should have seen me. Every time Primrose said, like, I can't believe you didn't trust me and, like, ask me this question, I was like, aah!
I know.
Like, how do you?
I'm pretty sure that's how Micah was feeling,
too. Like, what do you mean, why didn't I trust you? You were never there. And every time I asked you a question, you just ignored me or told me to shut up. And it was like a secret witch thing. You were never there.
Well, and she's so baffled when she finally does ask these questions and Primrose answers her. And she's like, why would she finally answer me? And it takes Jamie going, maybe because you're both adults now.
I know.
Like, you were a kid before and now you're an adult. And she's like, wait. Oh. Like, it's such a sad moment.
Oh, God. It was not a happy feeling. It was just like, oh, my God.
I know. I know, but I love Micah so much.
She, for all of, her upbringing was so dismal.
So terrible. Yes.
Dismal.
Yeah.
It was not happy.
Not at all.
Just dismal and gray.
Yeah.
If I had to pick two words to describe it.
That would be it. Yep.
Dismal and gray. And then,
yeah, for sure.
At the same time, though, she picks Jamie, who is the grumpiest person.
I know.
But at the same time, I'm like, I'm married to Jamie? So I get it?
Yeah. Yeah. But she sees who he is. And he also has his own trauma, because everybody in this book has a traumatic background.
Everybody has fucking trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody.
I mean, that's what the found family trope is.
I know.
Yeah.
Everybody has fucking trauma. You got Jamie, who was chased out of his house by his brothers.
I know. So upsetting.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Like, when I heard his backstory, I'm like, Jesus Christ.
I know. It's awful.
Jesus, I knew it was going to be bad, and then I heard it, and it was way worse than I thought it was going to be, and I'm like, oh my God.
I know.
Why?
And then we've got Ian and Ken, and I couldn't help but think of Ian as Ian McKellen the entire book, and I don't know if that was the intention, but that is all that went through my head.
And then the thing with Ian and Ken is, like, I loved them to pieces, But I just, every time they were talking about their past and how they had lived in secret and they couldn't love each other and it was only recently they could have gotten married, and I'm just like, oh, yeah.
I know. I know. Yeah. Yeah. But
everyone.
I loved it so much. Like, they all, like, they're all so different, but they all are family, and they just accept each other the way that they are, and that's just the way that it is, and they all love each other, and they're supportive, and and that's what makes this book work, I think.
But you
with
know,
all of the problems it has.
You know what makes the book work?
What?
Are the kids.
Yeah. The kids are hilarious. Terracotta.
Oh my god.
Just like threatening murder the whole time. That
Terracotta is fucking Jamie in miniature.
Oh, 100%.
And it's hilarious because Jamie doesn't even see it but loves her so much. Adore it.
Oh, adore so it. Good. So good. Yeah, and like that whole thing, like Micah says when she gets there, she's like, "Hey, your distrust is going to put them in danger, and eventually it's going to happen that something
happens."
And Jamie's
all like, poo-poo,
yeah,
poo-poo.
And Jamie's like, ah, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, guess what? Catastrophe. And who saves the day? Micah.
Micah.
But I love that, too, because Terracotta felt so terrible. Like, she sat with her and was just like, oh, my God, I did this. This was my fault. Like, she told me not to do this levitation thing, and I did it anyway, and it's like, yeah, well, you're a kid, so.
I mean, I was going through, and it's funny because Rosette, I was going through and doing all the character names for, like, the notes and everything.
Yeah.
And for, like, in the book, Terracotta comes across as older than Rosetta.
Yes.
But Terracotta's 8.
Yes. Rosetta's the oldest of the three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I knew that Rosetta was the oldest, but even so.
Yeah.
And so you're, like, looking at Terracotta, you're like, you are fucking 8.
Yep.
Exactly. You are 8 years old.
Yeah.
Child,
I know.
Put your ass down.
I know. And I love it because Micah is so patient with her, and she's, like,
oh, she
kind of gets a kick out of it. She's, like, I understand what's happening, and so I'm kind of letting you just, like, do your thing, but also, please don't do that, because it's dangerous. Like,
she is so patient.
I know. She's, honestly, she was more patient than I would have been.
Oh, my God, yeah. I would have whooped some ass.
With both Terracotta and Jamie.
Oh, yes.
Like, I was frustrated with Jamie as well, because it's, like, you have set the tone here, my dude.
Mm-hmm.
You are the one that needs to sit her down and say, she is trying to teach you. You need to listen to her.
So, like, with my experience as a teacher and as a mom, I would have been like, fuck you both.
Exactly.
And, Terracotta, you will come to these lessons now.
And take them seriously.
No,
yeah.
And even if you don't do anything,
yeah,
you will be listening and you will be respectful.
Exactly. Yeah.
There will be no more disrespect.
Yeah. Mm-mm. I did also...
Because you are 8!
I know, that's the thing, is she's like... Well, that was one of the best lines, I feel like, is Jamie says, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact line, but he says something like, yes, she just wanted to show up an 8-year-old child. Like, she doesn't think that she can't beat you. Like, it's like, what are you thinking?
What? No! Even Micah's like, what?
I know! Like, what?
No!
And, like... You know, well, I mean, Micah was unconscious at the time, growing a plant out of her throat.
So funny. I'm so glad that Ian was there.
I know. Yes. Yeah. Oh, wait! What are we drinking?
Oh!
We forgot to talk about it. We are drinking bees' knees. Because of the beehive that Ian wants to build throughout the entire book. Because he always starts projects and... then
doesn't finish them.
Leaves
and
them.
Like when he's anxious, he's just hammering into the beehive. That's what he does the whole book. He's like nailing into the boards of the beehive. And the gin, because they drink pink gin, Jamie and
that's
Micah.
that's their bonding.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love a bee's knees, actually. It's very similar to a gimlet. If you don't
it's delicious.
If you don't like gin, it's a good cocktail for you.
I agree.
So
I absolutely agree. Yeah. It's very refreshing, actually.
It does not taste like gin.
No, it tastes like lemon juice.
It's kind of similar to a lemon drop.
But not
as sweet.
So sweet. Yeah. What else did I want to talk about? Oh, the setting. Nowhere House.
Nowhere House!
Oh my god. The initial description of Ian and Ken's cottage sounded exactly like the cottage from The Holiday.
Yes.
And I was like, sold. I'm in. When do I move in? Like, I'm here for it.
I want to live in a cottage on the beach.
Right? Ah! It sounded amazing.
I also want to be able to call down, like, starlight.
Oh, that was so cool. Yeah, let's talk about the magic a little bit, because it was a little bit different from what you usually see with, like, witchy books.
Yeah.
Which I liked a lot, actually. It was very unique. But, like, being able to capture moonlight and starlight and, like, all that kind of,
well,
like,
also, like, the magic was always there, and it was kind of mischievous, and it wanted to be used.
Yeah.
And it built up with more, the more witches that were there, the more that it wanted to be used, and that's one of the reasons why you couldn't be around other witches, and that was one of the...
And, like, the little nudge that it gives her when she gets the initial note from Ian, where it's like, hey, we're looking for a witch tutor, and she's like, what the fuck is this?
I mean,
but, like, the magic is like, yeah, you should do it, like, go.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It
yeah,
good.
I thought that was really cool. Cute. Yeah, I thought so, too. And the witch fire that only works on cauldrons.
Dude, when that rope ladder caught fire, and I'm like, what?
I know.
And she
goes, oh, I got this.
Whatever. And even the people who were, like, living at Nowhere House,
I know.
Like, oh, that happens, like, all the time. It's just, like, it never burns the kids or anything. And I'm like, what is happening?
I know. And they're just, like, nonchalant. Ah, it's fine.
What is happening right now? And Mike's like, oh, yeah, no, that's just witch fire. I got that. Shoop. And then it was gone.
So good. I love it so much. And when they go, she finally convinces all of the people to let Rosetta go to this bookstore in town.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids have not really experienced an outing like this in a long time, mm-hmm. right? Because they're witches. And these four people that are raising them, they can't control the powers.
They're
so they're like, we can't let you go out in public because we don't know what to do if something goes wrong. So Micah's like, no, we need to take her out. Like, she loves being around people. Like, there's this bookstore that she would love. She loves reading. Like, please let me just take her to this thing. And she accidentally creates a little cyclone because she gets upset. It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
Because she gets mad about, like,
comic book.
Like,
they're talking about comic books. She's talking about comic books with these boys.
Yeah.
Of course it's boys.
Of course.
The boys, I'm sure, think they're right.
Of course.
And she's like, no, that is not how it is in this comic book. And then the cyclone happens.
And the boys don't even notice?
They don't even notice. I love it so much because they're so, intent on the comic book discussion.
Yep.
And then, like, they buy the books that they've destroyed all sheepishly, like, we've destroyed these books, but we're going to buy them anyway. Because,
yep. It seems only fair. I thought that was so cute.
It was adorable, like, and I loved it.
And I loved it, too, because the whole reason it happens is because Ian is trying to play matchmaker and sends Micah off so she can't control the magic. Yeah.
Like, Ian.
Oh, Ian. His heart is so big.
It is.
He just wants everyone to be happy and to be in love as much as he's in love with Ken. Like, and you can't really be upset about it, but also it's like, my dude, priorities.
Okay, but also, did you have on your bingo card in this book that the kids would reanimate a corpse?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. When that happened, I was like, wait, he opened the door to what?
Like, I got to that part and I went, say what now? You did what? With what?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what?
And Micah was just like, oh yeah, I can see how that would make sense. And I'm like, no!
I know!
No! Children!
That does not make
that
sense!
That does not
no,
make
no.
sense in any universe! That was your first thought?
Well, they are children.
No!
I'm sure they thought if they could, like, reanimate the bones from a distance, maybe they could convince.
But they're
I don't
bones.
Know. And the whole thing was hilarious.
Oh my god!
Such a good story.
And I'm just like, okay, well, let's take this problem we have by it by a million. Thank you, children. I appreciate your help.
Now, but what? It had to go that way because that was the only way that she was going to call Primrose.
I know. But I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was, wow, that was pretty epic. Yeah. There were actually a lot of really funny moments in this book. Like, there were moments where I literally, it made me laugh out loud.
I mean,
every interaction between Micah and Jamie where she's just needling him.
Oh, yeah, that was hilarious.
So good.
I even enjoyed, Edward's point of view. Like, his whole point of view was hilarious. Like, his whole, because it was so delusional.
Oh, yeah.
It was so delusional, and everything he said, I was like, no, that's not how it is.
I know. He had convinced himself of a truth that was absolutely not there.
Completely false.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, my dude. That is not how the world is. No one is going ever to promote you to partner at your firm because you're just not that good.
Yeah.
You have been working there how long? No, I'm sorry.
I know.
No, that is
just not
going
to happen. You need to let that go right now. Mm-hmm. You have a few more years of seasoning before that happens.
I think you're going to retire before that happens.
Yeah. Were you surprised to learn that Primrose and Lillian were sisters?
No.
Yeah, I wasn't that surprised
either. This was not the kind of book where you were surprised by the twists.
Not really, no. And she sets up enough, clues that you're going, wait a minute. Like, she calls her Peony at one point, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is not a book that you're surprised by.
No, and that's not the point of this book. Again, like, it's supposed to just make you feel good. Like, yeah.
It is a cozy book. You're not supposed to be like, ooh, woo, surprise, shock. It's not a, you know, romantic thriller.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Not the point.
Yeah.
The point was that Primrose was able to let the kids stay with Micah. Because, again, Primrose was an antagonist. Primrose could have taken those children away.
She was going to.
Yeah.
And then Micah was like, nope, over my dead body.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Micah threatening Edward?
Ugh. That was so good. So good. It was so good for so many reasons. Yes. First of all, it was very satisfying.
Yes.
It was just very satisfying to see Edward, get put in his place, right?
That.
But also, it was so satisfying seeing Micah be like, you know what? No, fuck you. I am the strong one in this scenario. Like, you don't get to tell me what to do or whatever. Like, I'm the one with the power here. I am the witch. You should be afraid of me.
Exactly.
And just owning it and accepting it as a part of herself in a way that she hadn't really up to that point.
Because she had been made afraid of her own power and her own person for so long. Because, again,
it was a huge character moment for her. Yeah, right. Yeah, it was just, such a great satisfaction. Like, I felt so much satisfaction in that moment.
And then Jamie's all like, oh, no, Edward's not a problem. You know, Micah's getting the shit out of her. He's fine.
Yeah, exactly. He'll be fine for a while.
Yeah.
He might leave and not say anything.
Yeah. We don't have to worry about Edward.
So good. But I liked it, too, because, the very last scene is, a completely different... Like, the first scene, you see this meeting of the Society of Witches, which is what Micah calls them the entire book, just to needle Primrose, which I think is also hilarious. But, they're meeting in the middle of nowhere, and they are miserable, and they barely get to interact, they barely get to connect, and this last scene of the book is her with all of these witches in her, private house, nobody should be able to find it, such a secret place, and they're all laughing and having fun, they've got their significant others, it's just a whole different vibe. It's community.
Yes.
At the
end.
It's
community.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely what was missing in the beginning.
Yeah.
And Primrose is like, don't expect this to happen all the time. And I'm thinking, it's happening.
It's
all the time.
Yeah. You're never going to be able to stop it now. The train has left the station.
Once this has happened, and not only that, I anticipate, I don't know if there's a second book after this, but I bet that curse is broken somehow.
Right? That's what I think happens too. Like, now that now that Micah knows exactly what went wrong, she's like, okay, we're going to fix this.
Yeah.
I don't want other people to go through this.
Why should the fucking parents of these kids be dying for no fucking reason?
Right!
Well, why didn't they stop this centuries ago?
Right! That was my question! I was like, okay, you know what happened, but you're not gonna try to do anything to fix it?
The
like, what the hell? I know!
Like,
yeah,
why
it
not?
Makes no sense to me. Why wouldn't you try?
Bad because things happen because when
it took 53 witches before? Okay, so use 56. Like,
seriously,
I don't know.
Get together! Come on! The more the merrier! What the hell?
Exactly. Like, I don't understand. Like, that for me was, like, the hugest question mark. It's like, so you have identified the problem, but you're not going to try to fix it.
Yeah.
Like, what?
The solution is yeah. just to ignore it?
Right. Like, I don't understand.
Okay, that doesn't, what?
Yeah.
The solution yeah. is not just to ignore it. It is to just try not to have kids.
Yeah.
Ever?
Right. Right. Okay.
That seems sure. counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Also counter to biology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially prior yeah. to birth control.
I know. I don't understand. Yeah. It was baffling to me, that part. But what do I know? Also, can we talk about the bestest dog?
Oh my god.
Such as a wee puppy.
She's a little golden retriever.
I know.
I love
Everybody
it so much.
Loves her.
So cute.
So cute.
And like written like an absolute golden retriever.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best written golden retrievers I have ever seen.
Yeah, I would be surprised if she doesn't have a golden retriever.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I could magic away my lab's hair.
Ugh. That was like every once in a while you read these books and you have like the one spell where you're going, I really want to be able to do that. That was the one where I was
as
like,
as soon as she said I magicked it away, I'm like, oh,
yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And no, it doesn't matter what you do, how often you brush them. Like, it doesn't matter.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
I know.
I brush her every day.
I know. It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
Nope. It just gets everywhere.
Everywhere.
But then you have the love, so.
The love.
Yeah, you can't really be mad about the fur because the love. Unconditional love.
That was the most golden retriever in a book I've ever seen.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about the fact that this is technically a slow burn romance?
I laughed. I wasn't really even that mad. I just thought it was hilarious. I got finally to the culmination. So it is a Grumpy Sunshine trope.
Yes.
For
yeah.
sure. I mean, there is no yeah. hesitation about that.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely a Grumpy Sunshine trope.
He literally calls her Sunshine
oh,
at
yeah.
one point, I feel like.
And
yeah.
he's the grumpiest of grumpy.
Yes.
He just scowls all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Until they get together. Like, their sex is, like, the happiest sex I've ever seen. It's, like, the sweetest
sex ever. I know.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so sweet. I
it's
mean,
very
don't get
sweet.
Me wrong. I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great, but it was so funny.
Yeah.
I actually really liked it because at some point she's like, you're so good at this. And he gives her this, like, silly little smile. I'm like, aw.
I know. It's so sweet. You're like,
oh, baby, don't love you.
I know.
Yeah, so you got this, you know, grumpy sunshine thing, but yeah, 87%.
I know. But the thing is, like, when I think about this book, I don't think about the romance first.
Well, that's because of all this fucking trauma you gotta wade through before you get to the end.
Well, yeah, that. And the magic, and you
this
know,
is not
just
a,
like
this is not an I escaped the world book. This is a
I know.
Colonialism on tap book.
It is, yeah.
Holy shit!
That said, I still cry at the end.
I did not.
Her
cry.
Little speech, her little speech about like I never thought that I would be in a place where I had so many people to love me and like I could be loved and that whole thing. Like I cried.
I did not cry.
Ugh, it got me.
I didn't cry. I will give you that. It. I mean, it's not that it wasn't emotional, but I didn't cry. But, yeah, colonialism on tap, lots of trauma. But it is resolved. There
yes.
is a resolution. You
yes.
do feel like, okay, found family, safety net.
Yes.
There is going to be, you know, a resolution to this. Everyone is going to be safe. The kids are going to be well cared for.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my god. Like at the end, when they're at the party, and oh god.
Oh, Rosetta is just staring lovingly at Belinda, who is...
And there's so Rosetta, who's the one black child, is staring at Belinda, who's like the first black woman she's been in contact with, and she's just like,
yeah,
oh, you're amazing. And I'm just like, oh my god.
I know. I also clocked that. Yeah.
I mean, I might have turned up a little bit of that.
That's fair. There were a few moments where I teared up, and that was one of them.
I mean, just because, I mean, my god.
But I still felt happy at the end of the
book.
You did.
Yeah. You did. Yeah. Well, because Mike is there. She's going to make sure those kids are okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Again, there's a resolution. You feel like everything's going to be safe and fine.
Yeah. Which is why it's a cozy.
Yeah, absolutely. I did not come away from this feeling sad. But it does deal with heavy stuff. I do wish it did have content warnings for people who would be triggered by the heavy stuff.
Yeah. I do. I have to do some research to see, like, how common that is with traditionally published books versus indie. Because I know indies especially are better about it than traditionally published books are. But also, like, the cultural difference between, like, an American published book and a British public book. Because I feel like it is a very American-specific thing.
And content warning should be a thing.
I agree. So, I agree.
Even with cozy books.
Yep. I would almost say especially with cozy books. Because if you think that you're getting something that's cozy, and then... Because I've had it happen to me where you think this is going to be...
That's the thing. If people pick up a cozy book and they think it's going to be, you know, sweet and nice and not going to be triggering, and then all of a sudden get whapped upside the head with something that's upsetting... That seems even more... Like, if I pick up a dark romance book, I expect things that are dark in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Even an epic fantasy, like, you just know that there are going to be things in there that are upsetting.
If I pick up George R. R. Martin, I know that there's going to be violence against women. I know.
Right. 100%. Like, you just know that's a given. Like, that's just going to happen. But just general epic fantasy, you know, there's going to be violence. Like, you just know that that is something that is going to be in there. Whereas with a cozy, the assumption is you're not really going to have those things. And that doesn't seem to be the case a lot of the time.
It seems to be the case. Based on...
And I do think that it's growing pains a little bit. We're still trying to decide what cozy means.
I agree. It's still very new.
Yeah.
It's very, very new.
Like, we haven't really decided yet what that genre really is. And I think until that really gets defined, we're gonna be running into this issue. Yeah.
And until content warnings become a standard.
Standard. Yeah.
In publishing, period.
Yeah.
This is going to be an issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, unfortunately.
And this is where indie publishing is going to be driving traditional publishing again.
Yes.
Because that's what indie publishing does.
Traditional publishing is the Titanic trying so hard to steer away from the iceberg. But it's already been hit. And it's just floundering.
It takes a while. It's a little behind the times.
It does.
But it does catch up eventually.
It does. And that's not to say that I don't appreciate traditional publishing.
And, you know, there are indies who get picked up by traditional publishing. And then their books get out and they get bought.
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely
great. It's wonderful.
Yes.
But it just takes a while.
Yes. So, general feelings about this
book? I did give it 5 stars.
5 stars.
I actually really enjoyed it. It was a quick read. It was fun. It was...
Yes.
I had no... It did. At the end was like, yay! I did not appreciate. I just thought that there was an important conversation that needed to be had. That was it.
Yes.
But it was not because I did not like the book.
Yeah. No, I very much enjoyed it. This was my... I actually reread this book for this podcast, and...
So I own it in the Kindle and the paperback now. It was not because I did not dislike... Wait, I
enjoy it.
I liked
the
book.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
It's an important conversation to have, because it's a... developing genre.
Right.
That's
exactly.
It.
So.
5 star, do recommend.
And I'm sure we'll have this this conversation again.
Oh, I'm sure. I'll read another book with no content warning and be like, what the fuck?
I know.
There was a child death in this.
I know. But we do recommend this book. It was very good. Just make sure that you know what the topics are when you go in. And what are we reading next time?
We're reading Grave Witch.
Yes.
I'm very excited. This is one of those early, like, 20-teens?
Yeah, I want to say 20-teens.
And this is actually, I don't know if any of you know about vaginal fantasy, but Felicia Day used to run a book club called Vaginal Fantasy. And this was a book that they picked. And I read it with them. And this was one of them. And I
really enjoyed
it. So it's,
and I remember, like, there was only the first one that was out when they read it, and we had to wait for each book to come out. And it was so exciting every time. And the newest book came out last year? It was a while ago, I guess.
It was in the teens still.
Was it really? God.
Yeah, I
my
checked.
Sense of time is so fucked. What year is it?
Where the first
are
one
we?
Came out like I know. The first one came out in like 2012.
Okay.
And then
this one,
and then the last one came out like 2017.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So it was like, it's Grave Witch by Kalina Price.
Yeah.
But it's an urban fantasy.
Yes.
We're delving back in. All right.
So this is Intoxicated Literature. I am Daniela Drake.
And I'm Evelyn Crow.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Intoxicated Literature. Drink well, friends.